You're listening to the DX Audio Service. And welcome back to Side 2 of this cassette, the DX Audio Service for June 1985. Hi, I'm Fred Vobey, and on this side of the cassette, we'll take a look at the Domestic DX Digest column. Also, we'll have information about WNYC Radio and WHAS Radio in Louisville, Kentucky, which, as you may remember, was kind of a hot DX item a while back when their big 600-foot tower fell down, and they were operating only with 700 watts. So it was kind of interesting to try to DX Clear Channel 84 there for a while. And of course, we should probably give you the answer to our trivia question. I think we'll do that right now. As you remember, on side one of this cassette, we introduced Jerry Starr with a thematic oldie of the past, and it went something like this. If your answer was the Mutual Broadcasting System, you're absolutely correct. Here's something that was on the air about 10 years ago, and then following in some of the other Mutual logos.
Linger a little longer.
It's 1934, the decade of Rudy Valley.
We'll dream our cares away.
1934, the heyday of comedian W.C. Fields.
Happened to stumble across a piece of bourbon, and I went right on stumbling for several days thereafter.
Radio listeners of the 30s also remember Al Jolson.
Weep no more. Weep no more, my lady.
1934 was also the year for something new in radio, a live hookup between four stations sharing programs of a mutual interest. It was the birth of the nation's largest radio network.
This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
The Mutual Broadcasting System, now celebrating its 40th anniversary. And just as listeners of 1934 counted on Mutual, listeners of 74 equally depend on this Mutual Network station.
Those were some of the Mutual News Network logos, which were used back in the 60s and the 70s by the Mutual Broadcasting Service. Now it's my great pleasure to introduce to you Mr. Bob Walker with the Domestic DX Digest column.
Thanks, Fred, and welcome to this month's edition of Domestic DX Digest. Some special items of note of stations you might want to have an ear out for. On 750, KJEL in Lebanon, Missouri, was noted way over WSB with country and western music, promos, and weather. They've just recently moved from 1080 kilohertz onto the clear 750. On 830, WLND in Cortland, Ohio, was noted way over WNYC with country music, clustered ads, weather, and sign-off with a patriotic song. They were noted with a good signal by both John Malicki and Kermit Gary in Pennsylvania. On 840, WHAS in Louisville by this time is back up to 50,000 watts, but on April the 5th, they lost their transmitting tower to a windstorm in Louisville. So for a couple of days, WHAS was operating with a 300-foot long wire loaded with 700 watts, probably the first 700-watt clear channel station. By the way, if you did hear them during that time, you might want to drop them a note. That might be an interesting QSL card to get. They are back on the air now at full 50,000 watt power, but with a temporary 300-foot tower, so we might even be hearing some more silent periods out of them as the new tower goes up. WDAO on 1210 in Dayton, Ohio, a new set of call letters for the former WAVI. WDAO is the black soul format that was on the FM band there as WDAO for so many years. They have moved it to AM, the owners that is, and the FM is now adult contemporary. So a new format of such, WDAO on 1210 in Dayton, the former WAVI. On 1370 in Sussex, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, WKSH. They are no longer silent. They're now programmed as contemporary Christian music. KS14 is their slogan with a legal ID on the hour. Now, they're on the air from 0700 until 0100. They're formerly, of course, WGNW, John Rieger, sends that information into the National Radio Club. On 1450, Tony Fitzherbert notes that Bridgeport, Connecticut's WNAB went silent on March the 31st at midnight. Silent due to bankruptcy, even though they never had a silent period. So an open channel in the northeast there. Some frequency checks of note that have been noted as being heard with excellent signals. Kermit, Gary, and John Malicki have been dialing in the frequency checks, and we'll pass them on to you. On the third Monday of the month after midnight, you can hear WVFC on 1530 per the frequency checklist. They were in good under WCKY. WMBT on 1530 was noted from 0057 until 0116. Very good under WCKY with rock music, a couple of jingles, and an ID. And also on the third Monday of the month, WFTH 1590 was noted at midnight 50, strong with classical music and mentions of reports they've received with names read requesting reports from the frequency check. The third Tuesday of the month noted that WCHE 1520 was heard good, even with WKBW from midnight 2 until well past quarter after midnight, where they were programming oldies, current songs, and pulse test tones. And on the fourth Tuesday of the month, WCVA 1490, from 45 minutes after midnight until 55 minutes after midnight, good with test tones and a voice ID. Again, frequency checks a good way to hear new stations, stations which are on the air in normal silent periods for them to permit checking of frequency and deviation off of their frequency by professional monitoring services. Of course, it's a good opportunity for DXers to hear stations that normally may not be heard due to a blocked channel. Some emergency broadcasts over the past month or two that have come to us here at the DX Audio Service. WGOW in Chattanooga, Tennessee on 1150 was noted on April the 5th at 1946. Strong over several stations, John Malicki notes, with MOR music and oldies and tornado information. And at the same time, WCLE in Cleveland, Tennessee on 1570 was noted as well on the air with tornado information. 1030 was a DX test that you heard about here on the DX Audio Service. KCTA, Corpus Christi, Texas. There was no sign of this test on April the 15th. John Malicki, again, who seems to be the only person DXing this month, just noted some KDKA 1020 splash and some WBZ fading. And he asked the question, was KCTA even on? Now, a few other interesting items here from the pages of Domestic DX Digest. Most of the items of interest during the nighttime hours. WJR was noted off the air on 760 on April the 9th at 0210, and as well another big powerhouse on 770, WABC. New York was off the air the same day, April the 9th at 0211. WHAS 840 was off the air at 0145 on March the 18th. That's a Monday morning. And I have it from some very good sources that WHAS may be giving some serious thought to putting that monthly or possibly weekly silent period back into effect. So may open up a channel there for DXers. CJBC 860 was off the air on March the 19th. They're in Toronto, of course. They were noted off at 0212, but later were picked back up with some test tones. WWL as well was testing on March the 31st with test tones. They were noted at 0135. NWHK Cleveland was up testing on March the 18th at 0141 with some test tones. Lost stations testing, it seems like, is WKBW in Buffalo was totally off the air on March the 25th, leaving a fair signal for East Coast DXers from KOMA in Oklahoma City. And on that note, we'll conclude this edition of the Domestic DX Digest here on the DX Audio Service.
Thanks very much, Bob, for phoning in that report for the DX Audio Service. Usually on this side of the cassette, we feature what we call Muses from Members, and that's where you have a chance to speak up and be heard. Unfortunately, we don't have any muses to put on this edition of the DX Audio Service, so get with it. If you have something that you'd like to talk about, perhaps an article of interest for everyone that you'd like to read, or perhaps you'd like to talk about some recent DX you've heard, or maybe some comments about some receivers or things that you've done, all you have to do is either send me a cassette tape of your voice reading your muse, or reel-to-reel tape, or if you want, you can just type it out, and then I'll read it here on the DX Audio Service. And the only thing I would say is, as far as material that you record, be sure to keep it between, say, 3 to 5 minutes, if you can. That way everyone has a chance to speak up and be heard. But let's get with it, and send in your muses here, and be heard right here on the DX Audio Service. Well, I'd like to kick the microphone back over to the telephone line for Bob Walker again. Bob has an interesting story about WHAS in Louisville, Kentucky, so let's hear about that right now.
WHAS. From the Louisville Courier Journal and Times of April 1985, WHAS radio tower crash has impact on listeners across state. That proves Scott is a Cats fan, said the man on the phone who asked for anonymity by hanging up. He called just after last night's WHAS TV news update on the crash felt across Kentucky. The crash of the WHAS radio tower, April the 5th. There have been all sorts of UK jokes around here, WHAS radio program director Denny Nugent said. WHAS lost the rights to broadcast University of Kentucky basketball games next season, and many Wildcat fans have been calling the station expressing their ire. But it wasn't UK fans who fell the tower. It was the wind, and the 50,000-watt radio station hasn't been the same since. Usually it's on the air, but sometimes it's off the air for repairs. And even when it's on the air, it's only a shadow of its former self. You can pick it up just fine in the county, but drive by the Hall of Justice at the corner of 6th and Jefferson Streets, and you get more hisses and pops than quips and stock quotes. Nugent said downtown you're going to lose the signal between buildings. And out in the state where many people depend on WHAS for farm reports, news, weather, and sports, it's even worse. How long until the station is restored to its former self? It's hard to say, Nugent said. It changes hour to hour depending on what the engineers try and what works and what doesn't. Nugent said it looks like WHAS will have to put up a second temporary tower where the old one used to stand. He says they'll have to clear away the wreckage, and that will get in the way of building the permanent tower. But if we can get 50,000 watts into the second temporary tower, then we won't be in as big a rush to put up the permanent tower. The old tower was 675 feet high. The present temporary tower is 90 feet high. The second temporary tower would be about 260 feet. Nugent said it would cover almost as far as the old one, and he expects the construction of the second temporary tower to take about a week. The WHAS tower was built in 1937, Charlie Strickland, the Assistant Director of Engineering for WHAS Incorporated, said that normally a tower is designed to withstand 100-mile-per-hour winds. But, and he said, the tower had been maintained properly. A spokesman for the National Weather Service said wind velocities Friday afternoon topped out at 49 miles per hour at Standiford Field, but it could have been higher in other areas of the county. WHAS is part of the Emergency Broadcast System, a three-level civil defense network designed to provide local, state, and national information in the event of weather, defense, or other emergencies. WHAS is the station designated to provide this information to what is called the Louisville Operational Area, which extends about 100 miles in all directions. Strickland said that most other broadcast stations in the area have been monitoring WHAS, have now switched to WAMZ-FM, WHAS's sister station, which has a separate transmitter and tower. Nugent said it's their duty to know what's going on. We don't have an obligation to inform these stations. How much will the station lose financially because of the tower crash? Nugent said insurance should cover everything, including some lost advertising revenues. They cover clearing away the old tower, construction of a temporary tower, construction of the permanent tower, all overtime, and even the promotional cost of buying newspaper ads, plus loss of any business. If, say, there is a one-day-only sale and we lost commercials that we couldn't make good, they cover that. What insurance can't cover is loss of audience. WHAS, along with all the other stations in town, is in a ratings period, meaning the ratings service is recording the habits of local listeners. Those habits will go into a ratings book, and the stations will use that information to sell advertising. Yesterday, when WHAS management knew the station would be off the air in the afternoon for repairs, a giveaway was devised to keep listeners tuned in. The station announced in advance that $500 would be given away to the 84th caller after the station returned to the air. Sure enough, when the station signed back on at 5:55 p.m., the phone calls began. Apparently, some listeners stayed tuned to the void. Nugent said there will be at least one more sign-off when the station switches to its second temporary tower. He said, I hope it will be in the middle of the night. The transmitting problem did not affect WHAS's Kentucky Derby coverage, and as we record this at the beginning of June, WHAS is back on the air with 50,000 watts into a 290-foot temporary tower with plans underway to reconstruct the original 665-foot tower. For the DX Audio Service, I'm Bob Walker.
Daytimers are going to get some preferences as far as the 80-90 rule goes. The unveiling procedures will be used to award docket 80-90 FM stations. The FCC has increased preference for daytimers. In a 4-to-1 vote, the commission moved to increase a comparative hearing criteria, weight of past broadcast experience equal to value of minority ownership and local residence. The commission said the action will give some daytimers at least equal footing with minority groups for docket 8090 FM stations. Also, the FCC said it plans to hold comparative hearings in cases where mutually exclusive applications exist in docket 8090 proceedings. However, Mass Media Bureau Chief James McKinley says the plan could change depending on the number of applications the FCC receives. If changes in the selection process are needed, none will be made midstream for particular channels, he adds. The docket 8090 rules are scheduled to be published in the Federal Register on mid-April to take effect in mid-May, McKinley said. The process to select applicants for the first docket 8090 channels could start in mid-June. Completing the entire docket 8090 process could take about 3 years. FCC Commissioner Henry Rivera, who cast a lone vote against the proposal, said it did not give enough advantage to minority groups and to other groups new to broadcasting. This decision, by conferring significant new comparative advantages on a large segment of the established broadcast industry, locally owned daytime AM stations, in the licensing of new FM stations, will assure that a minority of new FM outlets are awarded to daytimers, Rivera said.
FCC Chairman Mark Fowler disagreed. He said that only about 40%, that's 277 of the 689 Docket 8090 communities, already have existing daytimers. That means a good number, 60%, have stations that stand a good chance of winding up in minority hands.
New York Clear Channel daytimer loses appeal. This article from the pages of Broadcasting Magazine. WNYC AM, the New York City-owned station, has lost its last bid to continue operating at night on 830 kilohertz, a right it has had since 1943, despite the interference of its signal with that of WCCO in Minneapolis. The Supreme Court ruled last week denying the city's request for review of a lower court opinion affirming the FCC's decision to end WNYC's current nighttime operation. But the station, proud of the programming it offers, is not giving up its fight to continue offering it at night, if on a different frequency. The commission had granted the special permission to WNYC to broadcast between the hours of 6 p.m. and 10 p.m. during World War II, because the station was thought to provide needed wartime service. WNYC, a Class II station on the air since 1923, is technically authorized to operate with 1,000 watts on the Clear Channel station, on which WCCO is the dominant station, from sunrise in New York until sunset in Minneapolis. WCCO's effort to restore WNYC to its pre-war operating hours began in 1954, when New York asked the commission to regularize the temporary authority it had been given. WCCO contended that listeners in parts of Michigan, New York, Pennsylvania, Ohio, West Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Mississippi were being denied the nighttime service it was providing. And finally, in 1982, the commission accepted WCCO's position and ordered WNYC to end its nighttime broadcasting. An initial hearing on the request resulted in an administrative law judge's initial decision recommending a grant. But commission consideration of the case was deferred pending completion of the Clear Channel proceeding, which the commission had initiated in 1945 to answer the question of whether the 25 Clear Channels should be broken down. That proceeding ended in 1961 with the decision to add full-time stations to 13 of the frequencies. WCCO was not affected, and in 1980, following a second proceeding, the commission authorized existing dominant Class 1A stations, including WCCO, to operate omnidirectionally with 50,000 watts. But the commission was not ignoring New York and its ambitions for WNYC. In the 1961 Clear Channel decision, the commission noted that 830 kilohertz, quote, should be given special attention, unquote, because of the pending hearing that involved the additional use of the frequency. And in disposing of petitions for reconsideration of that decision, the commission appeared to invite WNYC to apply for authority to operate with up to 50,000 watts if it chose a different directional pattern and a different transmitter site. The commission said those changes might make it possible for WNYC to afford WCCO at least as much protection as it was then providing with a power of only 1,000 watts. WNYC responded in 1964 with a request for the higher power and the changed facilities. 14 years later, after 20 pre-hearing and 69 hearing sessions, the record was finally closed on August 24, 1977. And 2 years later, the administrative law judge issued the second initial decision in the case. Like the first, it favored WNYC. It said the public interest, quote, requires the granting of the 50,000-watt proposal, unquote, which it added encompassed the request for permanent authority for the temporary authority to operate at night with 1,000 watts. The commission reversed that decision. It said the programming WNYC was providing, notorious as it was not unique. WNYC had cited the quality of its programming, its public affairs, instructional children's programming, and drama and music as the principal argument for remaining on the air at night. The commission spoke highly of the station's programming, but said there were a number of other stations in the New York area, including WNYC's FM affiliate, providing nighttime service. It also said the station had not established that its programming, quote, is required to satisfy the special needs of its service area, which would justify its interference to Clear Channel WCCO. And the U.S. Court of Appeals in Washington, in affirming the commission, said the agency had rationally weighed the competing policies. The Supreme Court's action letting the decision stand was described by WNYC's director, Mary Nichols, as, quote, unfortunate for both WNYC and the millions of New Yorkers who will lose hundreds of hours of unique quality programming. But she said the story is not yet over. She said the station's attorneys are pursuing other options, including an application pending at the FCC for a change in frequency from 830 to 820 kilohertz. WNYC is seeking to operate with 50,000 watts day and 5,000 watts night on the unlimited time frequency. But it is unlikely to get it without another possibly lengthy fight. Seven other applicants have proposed operations on 820 kilohertz or adjoining frequencies in cities scattered between Massachusetts and Texas. A comparative hearing to sort out and resolve the conflicting applications is scheduled to start in July. Nichols, in her statement, said there will be no change in the station's programming in the 3 months before the court orders become effective, but the station will begin signing off at 8:30 p.m. in the fall. But if none of our legal remedies are successful, Nichols said, our allowable hours on the air would decrease over the winter months to the point where in December we would lose about one-third of our program schedule. For the DX Audio Service, I'm Bob Walker.
The AM band may expand. In January, the FCC released a second notice of information that proposed to define technical standards for AM stations in the 1605 to 1705 kilohertz band, which probably will be available for assignment by 1990, according to FCC staff members. The commission says it expects to release a third notice of information later this year. According to comments filed in a response to the second NOI, many broadcast organizations, including the NAB, favor primary use of the new spectrum by daytimers and full-time AM stations facing restricted coverage areas due to interference. The commenters favor the use of the new band by minority-owned and non-commercial stations. The Advisory Committee on Radio Broadcasting, which includes representatives from the FCC and other interested parties, is examining the technical and allocations issue involved in band expansion. The committee plans to release a report in June to the FCC containing its recommendations. In April and May of 1986, the U.S. will participate in the Regional Administrative Radio Conference, which will decide how to use the 100 kHz band. A second RARC session is scheduled for 1988. The docket number is GEN84-867, and if you'd like to comment on this issue, you can call the FCC at area code 202-653-8102, that's 653-8102, and ask for Edward Jacobs. I'd like to thank Jerry Starr and Bob Walker for helping me out with this edition of the DX Audio Service. Bob phoned in his report from his home in Walled Lake, Michigan, and Jerry produced the AM Switch column from the studios of WHOT Radio in Youngstown, Ohio. Thanks a lot, gentlemen, for helping me out with the service. I mentioned on our last edition that I might be moving pretty soon, and well, my address is still up in the air at this present time, so anytime you want to send anything, please send it to 39220 Cheshire, C-H-E-S-H-I-R-E, in Westland, Michigan. Zip code is 48185-3709. My last name, by the way, is spelled V as in Victor, O-B-B-E. If you have any friends that would like to be a member of the DX Audio Service, be sure to have them contact Mike Knitter, K-N-I-T-T-E-R, who is the editor of DX News, the National Radio Club magazine, at Post Office Box 24, Cambridge, Wisconsin, C-A-M-B-R-I-D-G-E. Zip code is 53523. And he can be called, please no collect calls, at area 608-423-4159. That's it for the DX Audio Service. I'll see you on the July 85 edition of the DX Audio Service. I'm Fred Vobey. Have yourself a great DX summer.